Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough real estate tax or financial problem keeping you up at night? Ask your questions free at InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. That's InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're joining us, thank you for making us a part of your day. Welcome to the first show of 2021, Matt.
Welcome. Thank you.
It's just a good day. I'm really
it's a
hopeful.
Special day, though.
Oh,
in addition,
it is.
It is. Yeah, you made sure of reminding us multiple times throughout the month that today is your birthday.
Today,
happy birthday, Bo.
Thank you. Today is my birthday. So, in case anyone out there is listening and they are looking to buy someone a present, I am that kind of friend. I will take a birthday present. You know, I'm not.
I think you'll be okay if they just send you a happy birthday email. If they just email you. I think that would
sure.
make your day.
Sure, yeah. Send me happy birthday email. If you have a question other than, you know, what I want for my birthday, but if you have a question about your finances, about your estate planning, your taxes, any and all of the above, send that to askbo@pfgwm.com. That's askbo@pfgwm.com. We're happy to answer those questions. You can also visit investingsimplifiedradio.com if you'd like to leave your question there. As a reminder, if you missed part of the show today, if you miss any of the show, we do rebroadcast the show on iTunes, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts. That's where we post those. So if you do listen on iTunes, please make sure to subscribe, give us a like, give us a review. It helps us to get the information out there. So Matt, I you know what I've been thinking about now that we've started this new year, and yes, now that I'm 1 year older, is that We often make New Year's resolutions, and we've talked about usually on the show when we do this New Year's show, we do a New Year's resolution show. So I want to cover that a little bit today. There's some New Year's resolutions we're going to talk about with, you know, risk management, some New Year's resolutions about, you know, your taxes. We're going to have Matt May in the studio a little bit later to talk about some, you know, some tax form issues. But do you ever do New Year's resolutions? You ever try to do that? Is that a thing, you know, in your family and in your life?
I mean, everybody, I think, in a way does. I think about it. I talk about it. Some years I'm seriously like into it and like, okay, I'm going to do this year. And then some years I just kind of say pass. But, you know, the typical ones are, you know, get in shape and eat healthier and then save more money, perhaps for retirement or for college. You know, with a little one, I was thinking about that too and making sure that it's fully funded or funded as well as I can make it funded.
I think that's a good one. You know, and I did not, you know, forward that over to him, did not pay him to talk about New Year's resolutions.
I just enjoy
money. Enjoy thinking about those things. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's maybe what got you into the industry in the first place, right? But so we definitely think of these things. One of the things that I have found with these New Year's resolutions and in normal years, non-COVID struggling years, the time to avoid the 24-hour fitness or the crunch or wherever you go to the gym is January, right? Because that's the boon year for gyms.
I feel terrible for the gyms this year because they're gonna be ghost town. I think, obviously, from the first couple of 3 weeks until we get through the vaccines and stuff, they'll probably be doing the opposite, unfortunately. But yeah, every year it seems like you kind of avoid the gyms, or if you're hopefully a regular gym goer, you almost skip the first couple of weeks just to let the new guys get through, and then maybe stay and maybe just not.
Right. Well, that's I remember reading that. And I don't know if that's true, but I remember reading that gyms make all their money then because they sign you up for an annual membership.
Yeah, annual membership or automatic draft and you just conveniently forget to cancel. And, you know, a lot of them do have an agreement where you have to stay with them for a year or something. But a lot of them now have been month to month, but then you just still have to, they don't make you just call and cancel. A lot of times you have to go in and cancel. And so that's right. The hoop. I had a friend who for a while switched over to another gym and then kept an old one for probably 6 months because he just kept forgetting to stop by the old gym. I think you did that too, Bo. You're pointing at yourself. There was another friend that did that. So you're not alone in this. So.
I'm not going to lie. I did carry a couple of gym memberships for a while, or, you know, you try to cancel them. There was a very famous Friends episode where Ross and Chandler tried to quit the gym, but they couldn't because they went in and tried to quit the gym, but then they ended up getting a joint bank account to pay for the gym because they tried to quit the gym and then tried to quit the bank. So that they thought if they just went to the bank and closed the checking account, then the gym couldn't pull the money anymore, but then the bank wouldn't let them quit either. But, you know, one of those things that happens, and it's a common thing, is you make these New Year's resolutions, you think that you're going to be, you know, following through on them, but then you don't. And so one of the things I want to impress to folks that are out there listening is if it is a financial resolution, make sure that, you know, one of the things that helps with a gym, right, is an accountability partner, right? Someone to go with. And that accountability partner could be a team like ours. It could be your current financial advisor. Could be just someone that you speak to about money, someone that you bounce ideas off of. But start those, whether it's, like you said, if it's going to be saving for college for a little one, if it's going to be saving for retirement, fully funding a Roth, getting your emergency fund set up. One of those things, get it started, get an accountability partner. And it's as easy, that accountability partner is as easy as setting up automatic withdrawals, right? Set and forget it. Get yourself set up to $50 a month or $100 a month into a Roth account, right? Because even if you only have $1,200 going in, that's $1,200 that you didn't have before, and you can set it and forget it and don't pay attention to it, right? Just get started saving, because one of the things that I was talking about this with a client the other day, and it's interesting. I nerd out on it a little bit, and I don't know if you've been on the show since I've talked about this, but if you fully fund a Roth IRA starting at age 20 and fully fund it until age 30 and stop, versus if you don't start till age 30 and fully fund that Roth IRA all the way till age 65, which includes the increase once you hit age 50, everything else being equal in terms of returns that you're getting, investments, all that stuff, everything else being equal, which account do you think has more money?
I've heard this, so I'm going to cheat here that, the first one.
The first one does. It's crazy,
compounding,
right?
And yeah, the earlier you start, yeah. So it's very important if you have kids or younger people in your life that you can give a piece of advice to, you know, this time of the year or really any time of the year. Start early. The earlier, the better. But at the same time, you know, it's also never too late to start.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way of putting it. It's never too late to start. And whether it is you contributing to a Roth or whether it's more you're going to pay off debt. You know, I just got off the phone a couple days ago with a client who was talking about one of the things that she's so excited about is she's almost debt-free, which is a great feeling, right? To be debt-free, and that includes mortgage, credit card debt, student loan debt, all that stuff. That's a big goal of hers, and that's huge. So if that's your goal, if that's your New Year's resolution, is to start working on that debt. And again, whether that's just increasing your payments from the minimum to add $100 extra of principal. And if you don't have any debt, if you've done a great job not having a debt, but you have a mortgage still, hey, think about increasing your principal payment by $50. $50 a month. You won't even notice it going out of your bank account, right? And we're not allowed to go out to eat right now. We're not allowed to go anywhere. Take that money that you were spending on something like that and throw it towards the mortgage, throw it towards debt. Because these are good resolutions to have, right? Good resolutions to think about financially that don't necessarily involve starting a relationship with a financial advisor.
Exactly. And I think a lot of time, the reason we abandon resolutions is because they feel like a giant undertaking, you know, just an elephant. You know, how do you need an elephant? One piece at a time, right? So, you know, if you wanted to get in shape and if I wanted to get a six pack right now, it'd be challenging. It would take me quite a while. But, you know, if let's say you're like, I want to retire at this age with this income, how do I get there? We have a roadmap that you come up with, and then step by step, you get yourself on that track of that roadmap. Same as going to the gym, you know, start going on a treadmill, maybe start doing weights. And then if you get in a routine and set smaller goals for yourself and maybe monthly check-ins or something, like you said, with an accountability partner, with your advisor. That way you can stay on track, because otherwise, you know, come February or March, most resolutions are thrown away. I think my sister told me this, that if you do something for, is it 6 weeks, it becomes a habit? I know you mentioned this too.
Yeah, I'm not once. Sure. Yeah.
But I think if you do something for about 6 weeks consistently, it forms a habit in your brain to where you're more likely to keep it up and
keep
not
doing it. Yeah.
Stop. Yeah. I'm sure my sister's listening, so she'll remind me later. But yeah.
So exactly how long it is. No, that's a really good point. It's the lack of follow through, or the feeling like it's an onus on you, feeling like it's difficult. So if you need that accountability partner, if you want to talk to somebody about being that accountability partner, or just kind of explore that more, if your resolution is to review your financial situation, if your resolution has been to do any of those things, let us help you get started with that resolution, get started on the right foot, and make it a habit. Give us a call at 503-253-3000. As always, that it's no obligation. It's a free consultation. There are shops around town that charge up to $1,000 to do the kind of work that we do for folks for free, for radio listeners. So give us a shout, 503-253-3000. If it makes sense to you, if it's something you want to keep doing, if you want to hire us as a accountability partner, I'm going to trademark that, then we'd be happy to do so. But worst case is, it just takes, you know, an hour or two of your time to sit down with somebody and get that free professional second opinion. So give us a call, 503-253-3000. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement with their Social Security Seminar on Demand. Now, you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you've invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years, so shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, that can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thanks for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, if you have a question that has been keeping you up at night, whether that involves your investments, your financial planning, your estate planning, or your taxes, make sure to send that to AskBo, A-S-K-B-O, at pfgwm.com. We'd love to answer that on the air. We're happy to talk, you know, as we've been talking, you know, Matt, as we've been talking, we'd love to talk about what we enjoy talking about, but we really want to answer those questions that have been keeping you up at night. So be sure to send those there or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and feel free to submit your question there. So guys, as we close out the year, or I guess technically as we start the new year, right? Because it's the start of a new year. You know, a lot of times people have questions about when to expect their tax statements. You had a pretty crazy year in the markets. Maybe people realized some gains. Maybe they realized some losses. Maybe they sold at the bottom and bought at the top. Who knows, right? But they want to know, what is the taxable amount that happened in their brokerage account, in their investment accounts? And when do they normally come out?
So, you know, it's an interesting phenomenon. There's also a little bit that I would add to that. There's some cap gain distributions that happen from actively managed mutual funds that typically come out in December. So that could throw in an additional tax event that's a bit of a surprise. But what we usually see is that the 1099-Rs or INTs, the kind of tax forms that you need to prepare your taxes, we really shouldn't expect them until at least the middle of February. I know that that's disappointing, but if you have money invested and you want to file your taxes, it's unreasonable to expect to file in January. And what I would couple with that is, lately, over the last several years, we've seen the tax preparers, they don't know what actual rules they need to use to file your taxes for the prior year anyway. They're waiting on certain things to clarify how they file. So it really makes a lot of sense to wait anyway for that perspective. But also from a financial institution level, we don't usually typically see those tax statements until the middle of February. I would say March 1st would be the absolute, minimum amount of time where I would be like really looking out to see when is my tax statement coming.
Sure. And when you mentioned tax statements, you mentioned 1099-R. So for folks that don't know, the 1099-R is the form that comes out if you have a retirement account and took money out. So whether that's a 401k, 403b, IRA, Roth, any of those things, and you took money out, meaning you paid yourself an income from your retirement, or you did a rollover, you did a direct, you did a distribution from your 401k, any of those things, you'll get a 1099-R. That's why it says R for retirement. You may also get a 1099-INT, like Matt said. You normally get those from your bank because it talks about the interest that you earned on CDs or your savings account. You may also get a 1099-B or a consolidated 1099 from your broker. So if you had any investments, like Matt mentioned, that pay you dividends or interest, whether that's bonds or stocks, or you had mutual funds, like you mentioned, that have a capital gain distribution that you may not have actually taken any money out.
Perhaps capital losses, too. I mean, they distribute a little bit of each sometimes.
Sure. Or if you sold at a loss, like we talked about, did some tax loss harvesting.
Yep.
And a big reason, I've heard, and you guys can correct me if you've heard different things, but what my understanding is, the reason that it can take a long time sometimes is those companies, those brokerage houses with TD Ameritrade, Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, wherever you have your money, they are waiting for the companies where you've invested to let them know how to calculate those. Because sometimes, and you may see this more often in mutual funds, a lot of times in REITs, if you own real estate investment trusts or other alternatives, those dividends that were originally distributed as dividends, maybe back in June, have now been reconstituted. They've reclassified those as maybe a return of capital, or they've reclassified those in a different way. And so TD Ameritrade, Schwab, Fidelity, these places don't want to send out a 1099 with incorrect information, because those companies actually have until their tax filing deadline to reclassify those distributions.
Absolutely. And on those REITs, they typically, some of those investments out there report K-1 tax forms. So K-1s, that March 1st deadline that I was talking about, I've seen them come out in May. Yeah. I had an invest, there were investors that I knew of that didn't get their K-1s until September or October of last year, yes. Which you've already filed, and now you have to just go back and change your tax filing.
Sure.
You have to amend it. Yeah, amend your taxes. Now, one item that comes up a lot on the interest ones, you end up coming to the bank and asking for them, but if the interest was less than $10, I believe, you don't get a 1099. You still have to report it, but you don't get one from the bank. So sometimes you get people waiting for those firms. But the interest is very simple, right? It accrues, and so the bank can push that information out pretty quickly. So you can probably be looking to get that probably in the first couple, 3 weeks of January. While mutual funds will probably be the longest on the reporting. Well, outside of what you just said, the K-1, which is definitely going to take a lot longer.
Right. Well, it'd be a question for Kevin, but my experience as well has been, if you're worried about filing your taxes and you don't know what those 1099s are going to be, you can file an extension, right? And the caveat to the filing the extension, though, is that you have to make sure that you understand that your taxes are still owed. They're still due on April 15th.
Right.
Even if you file your extension, you still are whatever tax you owe is due on the 15th, and then you get to pay interest if you don't pay it by the 15th. Interestingly enough, if you have a refund due, the government doesn't seem to pay you interest.
They don't mind you.
They don't get to pay those penalties, those extra fees.
Well, any of that stuff, and some of the things that are going to come up when we talk about that is any sort of loans that you've had for your business. If you did the PPP loan, if you did had a business, if you did take an EIDL grant, if you did get stimulus. All these other things are going to factor into your taxes. The nice thing about the stimulus is it's not a taxable income. And the PPP, they're still figuring out all the rules. So
That's kind of what I was saying with the filing with the tax professionals. It's like there are still things that for 2020 that are left to be resolved or could change. So it might be smart to wait until March to file your taxes this year. I know if you're expecting a return, you want to file it like January 2nd. It's like, I want my tax return. I got ideas, maybe paying off some Christmas bills or something like that.
Right.
It's typically what we see. But it might be prudent this year especially to give it to be a little patient, to give it a little more time.
Right. Well, and the big key, unfortunately, we deal with this, often when folks are trying to get their taxes done, and that's the last missing piece, right, is the 1099. And unfortunately, that broker-dealer, whatever, brokerage has, whatever custodian you have your money with, they can't push it out any faster than the data that they have. But it can be really good, and I'm going to make a blanket recommendation. We almost never do, but I will make a blanket recommendation here because in my experience, it really does help you. It's set up online access at your custodian. Wherever you have your funds held, doesn't mean you have to take, you can still get paper statements, still get paper 1099s. But in my experience, that 1099, as soon as it's ready, will show up on your online access. And it
first.
Oftentimes, yeah, they'll show up there first. Oftentimes weeks, if not a month before you get it in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really really itching to get yourself set up and to get that tax process started, and I know Kevin will appreciate us, advising people to get started on that early. But if you're getting your tax process started, consider getting yourself set up with online access. Most custodians, it's free; it doesn't cost anything. It's really easy to set up, and then you'll be able to go on there and get your 1099 form. Same as if you're paying student loan interest. If you have online access, you can set that up. Your mortgage statement, anything that's going to be applicable from a 1099 standpoint to getting your taxes prepared. If you have online access at the bank, at the custodian where your investments are held, at the lender, you'll be able to get those forms online, and it can really save you a lot of headache waiting for it to come in the mail.
And if you even go one step further, a lot of people are do it yourself, right? Tax people.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so if you go to TurboTax or any of those softwares, you can actually download all that data right there by logging in through the software. So if you have online access for whatever bank you're at and you just put in your login information, it'll download the 1099. Now, interest is not very complicated. You just put in a couple of numbers. But if you have a brokerage account, let's say it's at TD Ameritrade, mm-hmm. you'd have to put in all the line items. If you log in, it'll just download the data and it'll plug in all the right cells and you'll be done. So much, much quicker.
A little bit of a tangent here. Sometimes, occasionally, you might enter that data into your tax planning software, like a TurboTax or something like that, and all of a sudden your tax bill increases significantly. Sometimes I'm seeing that the cost basis of an investment is not reported.
Yeah, incorrectly reported.
Or incorrectly reported. Like, say you sold $5,000 of investment, and maybe you sold it at a loss. Maybe you bought it at $6,000 and you sold it at $5,000. You should get a tax loss. You should harvest that loss, and it's actually beneficial from a tax filing perspective. But if the tax cost basis is not reported, the IRS is going to assume it's a zero.
Right. Well, that's a big thing. That's a really good point, Matt, to make sure I'm going to make my second blanket recommendation, right? Is to make sure you review that 1099 if you have taxable investments, whether that's in a joint account, in a trust account, in an individual account, but you are investing at Edward Jones or Fidelity or Vanguard, but you have money in a taxable account. Make sure you review that 1099. And make sure that you're making sure that the cost basis, I stumbled over my words a little bit there, make sure that the cost basis is correct. Because, interestingly enough, it is not the job of the custodian to track your cost basis. It falls on you. Yeah. Now, if they can track the cost basis, and they do, and most places do, most of those custodians will take care of that. But if for some reason there is cost basis not available, if you've transferred your money in the last couple of years, maybe the cost basis didn't transfer properly, and you need to track that. If that's been something that you've been wondering about, and it's a good segue here before we go to break, but if you've been wondering about that, if you're looking at your 1099 and it is confusing to you and you're unsure about the cost basis, about the taxable gain that 1099 is showing, give our office a call. One of our member of our team would be happy to go over that with you, review it, see if there might be some issues with it, and we'll help you figure that out. Call us at 503-253-3000. We'll do that as part of your overall comprehensive review. We'll review that 1099. We'll make sure that you have all the information that you need. We also coordinate with your CPA or your tax preparer in case they have any questions. So 503-253-3000. We're happy to review those for you. Give us a shout. We're going to be right back with Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
Got a tough estate tax or financial problem keeping you up at night? Ask your questions free at investingsimplifiedradio.com. That's investingsimplifiedradio.com or by emailing askbo@pfgwm.com. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you for tuning in. We've been talking a little bit about some year-end options, maybe some New Year's resolutions. We've been talking about some items to be looking out as we're now starting 2021. 2020 is behind us. We've gotten that off our backs. Let's get rid of that. So as we go into that, you know, guys, we were talking a little bit in the break about risk and analyzing how much risk you have in your portfolio. I know, Matt, you've talked before about the three types of risk that most folks that we come across have. How do you measure that? How do you measure risk?
For us, we have a very detailed software tool that measures and quantifies how much risk we're taking in a portfolio. So we plain and simply look at all the investments inside a client's account or a prospect's account, enter them one at a time, and in the amounts that they're invested, and then it kicks out a number based on, you know, the overall exposure to different investments. It'll be somewhere in that 1 to 99 range, 1 being low, 99 being high. And for comparative purposes, the software tool that we use, it pegs the S&P 500 as a risk level 75. So if you're following the Buffett advice to just own the S&P 500 index, you're 100%, that's all you have, then you're a risk level 75.
You're going 75 miles an hour with a max of 100 or 99.
Yeah, I've also heard you call it a thermostat before.
Thermostat. Yeah. Okay. Room temperature, 75 degrees, something like that. Some people like it a little cooler. Hopefully you don't like it too much warmer. But, you know, personal preference, it really is a measure of how much risk you're taking. But again, as Bo pointed out, the three levels of risk are the level of risk that you're taking, and that's us entering all those different investments into our software risk calculator. And then the level of risk that you want to take and say, hey, Matt, I don't want to lose 53% when the market tanks like it did in the Great Recession. And then there's a level of risk that you need to take to hit your financial goals. That, of course, is coupled with our financial planning to find out exactly what we need to do over a long period of time to hit those goals. And it changes year over year. But the software tool at least helps us identify how much we're taking. And then we can manipulate it if we wanted to, perhaps come up with some proposals that might shift the risk either up or down, depending on how your situation looks. We can do that.
So Can you talk a little bit more about how, you know, risk is measured? Is that measured just because what does risk mean in terms of markets? So when I hear risk, is that just how much money I could lose? So if I have a risk 75 or 80, that just means that I'm going to lose because I'm risky, or how does that work?
Good question. So the tool has a good, bad, and ugly scenario deep embedded in the report that it kicks out. So it'll tell us, hey, in a good year like 2013, the stock market was up 32.3% at a risk level 75. Here's how your portfolio as it is now would have performed back then in 2013. Did you get as much as the 32.3% increase in the S&P? How much risk were you taking to get that? And it really, that is the key. You want to be able to look at your risk-adjusted returns. If you're not taking a level 75 risk and the market goes up, you shouldn't expect to get all of the returns of the S&P unless you're really outperforming on a risk-adjusted return. So say you're a risk level 50 and the S&P is a 75, and your risk level 50 has the same performance as the S&P 500 that year, that's dynamite. You're taking a third less risk and you're getting the same amount of results for it. We would call that a huge win. So using that tool, you know, various different investments have different risk measures. Cash would be a one. Usually most individual stocks are in the 90s. There's some that are in the 80s, like utility companies that pay, they're more consistent dividend payers and such. But most individual stocks are in the 90s, if not 99. Like an Amazon is a 99, Apple is a 99, just because historically those individual stocks have been quite volatile. We've seen them be volatile to the upside and make a lot of money, but there are times in their history where you can see deep slides on those share prices.
So what you're saying is that this particular stock doesn't necessarily mean if it's a 99 that it'll make most of the, you know, it's not performance driven, it's the volatility driven.
Yes, definitely volatility driven, to let you know in good times, bad times, how much could it make when the markets go up? How much could it lose if the markets go down? Another interesting part about the tool is it'll give us over a 6 month period of time, it'll say your portfolio as it sits right now with these dollars here and those dollars there, it'll give us a 6 month probability. 95% of the time, it'll fall within this range, not going up by more than a certain amount and not going down by a certain amount, 95% of the time. Interestingly enough, we broke those barriers twice this year in the springtime. Well, I guess last year, I got to get used to that. So last year, in the fall from February to March, we broke down below that 95% probability range when COVID really struck. And then we broke back above the upper range when the recovery happened. So it was really unique.
Yeah, well, I've heard you say before, you know, we've talked about it a little bit on here, but that we had the, you know, fastest, sharpest decline since, what, the Great Depression, right?
The fastest ever.
In the decline, and then the spring back was the fastest ever as well?
Yep, set a record. So in the Great Depression, 1929, it took 39 trading days to drop into bear market territory. Last year, we did it in 20 days. And then the recovery set in the 80s, I want to say 1988, if I remember correctly. It could be 87, 88.
It would make sense to be 88 because the, you know, Black Monday was 1987,
yeah,
right?
October, yeah. Right. So I believe it was 88 that set the recovery record, and we beat that also. So set a new record on the upside as well.
Wow, that's awesome. It's
mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling,
right?
Yeah, it's
shocking
that it could have done that. One other thing that I think it's worth mentioning on the tool, and you brought it up too, is that it looks like looks at the overall situation. So it doesn't just take a look at what perhaps we're managing, but also maybe if the client's managing some of their own assets, or maybe there is, you know, a large cash position. So all of it goes into one big mix and then gives us the score, because that's what really we should be paying attention to. Individual portfolios, you know, have their own individual score, but what do they actually mean in the big picture? That's what we're trying to focus on.
Right. And you might have a retirement account at work. You have an IRA, a Roth, cash positions at several different banks, your own brokerage account that you manage
Personally, you want to be able to look at your total risk that you're taking across the board. At least we would suggest that. That's really the goal that you're shooting for. And like Bo mentioned, it's not necessarily an indicator that, hey, I'm taking a bunch of risk, I could lose a lot. It's just knowing how much risk you're taking and then using that number to figure out if your investments are performing adequately.
Right, so, and you looking at it from a perspective of the roller coaster that you're riding.
Right. Right.
So what kind of a roller coaster are you on? Because having a riskier portfolio, we all know, having more risk doesn't necessarily equal more reward, right?
Right. And it's that's an indicator of quality. So if you're a risk level 75, but you don't own the S&P, let's say you're, you know, you got some international, you got some small caps, you got some bond funds, you got individual stocks that are concentrated positions, and it just so happened that you're a risk level 75, and going back to 2013, the market's up 32.3. If you're only up 16%, you're only getting half the level of returns for the same level of risk. That means something in the portfolio is off. There's some quality issues with your underlying investments.
Yeah,
and worth exploring a little further.
Yeah, and we can kind of dissect it and figure out which one of your accounts or, you know, is causing this, right? So we could kind of look at, okay, is it a specific fund or is it a mix of securities you have in a separate account? And then because the tool will break it down per account, per individual security, we can get really, really pretty close to figuring out where the problem lies.
And it's always with the disclosure. Past performance doesn't indicate future performance. But, I mean, the performance history of the investments we're looking at, I mean, that's really the only go-to information that we have on the expectations of what it might do in the future. And it's always something we're looking at year in, year out. Are these quality investments? Are they performing as they should for the level of risk that we're taking?
Yeah, that's a good point because the score does update frequently. It's not one of those where it just gets, you know, generated on a report and goes away, because the score gets refreshed as frequently as we want it to be refreshed.
Right. And with the markets up last year, then you really want to look at the overall risk, because call it, I think it's somewhere around 15-ish% gain for the S&P last year. Maybe your portfolio is up 12 to 18%. If you're in NASDAQ, you're up a lot more than that. Depending on where you're invested and your portfolio has made gains, it actually heated up your risk. So you might have started the year at a 67 and now you're a 74. And if your target is really a 67, could be time to cool it down a little bit.
Right. Well, that absolutely makes sense, because if you have something that is a higher risk that is performing well, you're going to have more money invested in that security or in that asset class, right?
Right.
And that's what a lot of people miss on the rebalancing front, is that that's the whole point of rebalancing your portfolio, right? Is to make sure, because if you're going for a 60-40 split, so you're going to be 60% stocks, 40% bonds, you've managed that with, you know, Vanguard funds and done really well. Over this last year, you may be way out of whack in terms of risk, but both ways, right? So if you're in a year where the market goes down significantly and does not snap back, but we have a March like we had, and then the bond funds do well, if they're performing well on the upside, then maybe you have too little risk at that point, right? Because you're have too much in that bond fund. And the big key here, folks, when we're talking about risk, talking about analysis there, is we look at your overall financial picture, because part of the story is, like Matt mentioned, the risk-adjusted return. And that's what he spent so much time talking about, because that's what he focuses on for our team, right? It's making sure that our portfolios are performing to their risk-adjusted return. But when he works in conjunction with the rest of our team, we work to say, okay, well, that's great. We need to make sure we have a risk-adjusted return that is adequate for the risk we're taking. But what kind of a return do you need to make sure your goals are hit, right? So what kind of a risk-adjusted return do you need to hit based on your financial plan? So that's why we always mention, you mentioned it a couple of times when you talk about the different risks, based on your overall financial plan, your goals, whether that's for retirement, saving for college, saving for a new house, about any of those things. We're happy to review those for you. We will put your portfolio into our tool. Like Matt said, it's a proprietary tool that we use. Put it into the tool. We'll put it into our proprietary planning process, right? We're going to go take you through those steps. We described them a couple of weeks ago. These are the steps that we take with every single client, every single listener that comes in and wants that review. We will do that complimentary for you. We will give you all that analysis, give you access to those tools that you don't have out there. And if it makes sense to continue the conversation with us, we'd love to do that. But as always, there is no obligation when you sit down with us. So if you'd like to have your portfolio reviewed, that's your New Year's resolution, right? Make sure that we take a second look. Give us a call, 503-253-3000, or send an email to askbo@pfgwm.com. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And we're back with more Investing Simplified. If you're just now tuning in, thank you for joining us as we finish out the first show of 2021. The talk about our New Year's resolutions. You know, if you have a New Year's resolution, you know, feel free to share it with us. Drop it on our, you know, on our investingsimplifiedradio.com page. Send it to us on our Facebook page. You can visit us there. Let us know what your financial resolution is. I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to hear about what people are doing to improve their finances, improve their lives with a financial New Year's resolution.
Maybe right? We can even share a couple of really good resolutions with the world, because, you know, we know the world is listening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so they all listen, right?
Yeah. So if you have a good resolution, if you send it to us via email or on our website, that would be great, because then we could talk about it
next week. We won't talk about your name, right, or anything. We'll just share, you know, interesting financial, you know, resolutions. You know, a lot of them we've heard, we talked about earlier. It's getting out of debt, is you know, getting your financial house in order. One of the things that I think is particularly applicable, and I've been thinking a lot as we transition out of, you know, 2020 with the, right, with the plague that has come over the world, is, you know, have you adequately planned? I, you know, find myself making sure, a resolution of mine personally, and I'll share this, is to make sure that I have adequately planned for if something were to happen to me, right? Mm-hmm. And making sure that if something happens to me, and the question I get a lot, you know, when I talk about this is, you know, folks say, well, you're going to talk about life insurance, right? Which is super, super sexy, right? Everyone loves life insurance. Yeah. Super exciting. But it's important because none of us get out of this alive.
Nope. Right?
Nobody gets out of this alive. And the key question I get asked a lot is life insurance a smart idea? I was talking to a client the other day and she said, well, I have, you know, life insurance policy. Is that stupid? Should I keep that? Should I have that? What should I do? And I said, what's it for? You know, what's the idea, yeah, of it? Because life insurance, and anybody who tells you, and I'll put the caveat in there like I always have to do, because make sure that you, you know, analyze your specific situation with, you know, a professional advisor. This is just generally speaking. But life insurance is not an investment, right? It's not something that should be pitched or sold as an investment. It's protection, right? It's insurance. It's something that is going to pay out when you pass away.
Yeah, it should be thought of as any other type of insurance, like your car insurance or,
yeah, you know, medical. Well, we insure our car, our house, right? We insure all these things, but we don't insure our life. And the question that comes up, though, when you are looking at your life insurance, right, when you're reviewing how much life insurance you have and what you have, or if you're looking at getting some, and a lot of folks look, you know, start looking when they buy a house, or when they buy a business, or if they have a child,
get married,
get divorced, any of these big life events is a good chance for you to evaluate that. But the question comes, and a lot of people ask me, how much life insurance should I have? How, you know, what is too much? What is too little? And there's no one rule fits it all. But the rule of thumb that I use and the way that I think about it is, if I were not to make it home from work tomorrow, what is an amount of money that my wife and children would get that I would feel comfortable knowing that they're going to be okay? And that's a very nebulous number, but the concept remains the same.
It is. But then you just have to break it down and, you know, people use different acronyms and different rules of thumb, but you just have to get down into the specifics. So, you know, I think you had an acronym the other day on the board when you were showing a client, but I think what's the first item on there?
So it's final expenses. So
final expenses.
The acronym is FEMER, F-E-M-E-R, that mm-hmm. I use. And just kind of analysis of how much you could conceivably want in insurance, right?
Right. Okay. So we got F.
Yeah, final expenses. You know, if you think about, I was talking with a client about this the other day, where he's looking at doing prepaid cremation services. Maybe that's something that you want to do. But if you think about it, at the end of life, there are bills that come due, if nothing else than just, you know, to be a bit morbid disposal of your remains, right? So how is that going to be taken care of? So maybe that's $5,000 or $6,000 you want to set aside for that, right? So that's F. Okay. The second letter is E, F-E-M-E-R. So E stands for emergency savings, right? Because if you have an emergency fund set up, or if you don't, if I passed away, I'd definitely want my wife to be able to have at least 6 to 12 months worth of expenses in an emergency fund. So maybe I put that in there as a bucket. So
that's
we're
a good one.
Together,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, especially since you might have just drained emergency savings if you had an illness or something. Illness or so sick. Replenish exactly. That in worst case, would being good case, would be her having extra money. So,
right.
Okay.
Right. And then that M, so FEMER, we talk about M, which is a mortgage. You usually apply that. A lot of people think about, if I were to pass away, I'd want my spouse to not have to worry about a mortgage payment.
Mortgage,
right?
Or general liabilities of any kind, right? So your car loans,
exactly.
Student loans. Okay.
Any loans, we use M as a mortgage. The idea is because a lot of folks want to have their mortgage paid off if they were to pass away, right? And then E, the second E, and it doesn't apply to everybody. It applies to you and I because we have young children. But conceivably, if you want to have an education fund.
Right.
So if you were to pass away, would you want to have some money set aside that's allocated for education for your kids?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the calculations that's easily done on a scientific calculator.
Yeah. Or you can go to, you know, generally speaking, you can go to college's website and see what their tuition is now. Mm-hmm. And you can guesstimate, based on a rate of return.
I actually think that like our Oregon College Savings Plan website, where you can just look at 5.8.
I think they do, yeah.
It has a pretty decent calculator. We are also able to do a projection for you too, if you're having trouble, because it does require a couple of steps, because you want to figure out what tuition is now and project
right.
it into the future, and then make sure you cover all the years.
Okay. Right. Right. So conceivably, these are all just possibilities, but you might want to have an education fund. And the last one is the one that most people miss out on, right? And I think it's the most important. It's the R that's at the end there. But most people think about those first four that we talked about, those mm-hmm. make sense, right? A lot
yeah.
of people think about paying off the mortgage.
Logical.
It's the primary one, right? Maybe they might think about, you know, final expenses, but that's a small amount. But what mm-hmm. you really need to do if you're an income earner is replace your income.
R for replace.
Right. So R for replacement of income, because if you are gone, your household loses your income.
Mm-hmm.
And that, how long does that need to go on? It depends, right? Some people want to look at replacing their income till retirement. Some folks just want to replace the income till their kids get to college. And the pushback that I'll get from that is, well, I don't earn any income, you know, because maybe you're a stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad, or you haven't had income coming in, so why would I need to replace income? But what you don't think about is that if you have small children, who's going to take care of them
right.
while you're at work? If you're
I have to hire somebody, or
yeah, hire somebody, get some extra help. You know, wouldn't that be nice to have something like that? So that's a different calculation for everybody.
Mm-hmm. But well, I think the other piece, not to interrupt you, but the other piece of it would be, you know, at some point when the kids grow up, you might end up going to work, right? So
right.
then there's
right.
that piece too.
Yeah, so maybe common thing that folks say is, well, my husband or my wife's just gonna have to get a job. Okay, that's great, and they may have to get a job, but what until they find a job? What if they can't find a job that makes up for the difference, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to think about that, and this is a personal question, right, for you and everybody that sits in there. But then what comes up, Matt, is, okay, so we add all that stuff up, and you know, I've added that up for clients when they come in and they say, okay, I'm looking at this. That's $2 million. That's a lot of insurance.
It is.
That might be too much. Like I said, it's a rule of thumb,
yeah.
right? You start the conversation there. But then the question becomes, what kind of insurance do I need, right? Because mm-hmm. there's term insurance, long-term care insurance, there's whole life, universal life, all these different
lots of them out there.
Yeah. Insurance policies, mm-hmm. how to make sense of it, right? And that's where we get into it. Really makes a lot of sense to utilize a professional to analyze that, right?
Yep.
Because it is really hard to digest all that information. And when you go to get, you know, when you're, it's not like, you know, it's not necessarily like a Geico or a SelectQuote where you can just go and pick it, right? Now you can, But if you're working with an agent, it doesn't cost you any more to work with a life insurance professional than it does to go to those websites, right? Right,
exactly.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't think about that.
And it is very, term is the one that everybody's familiar with. The other ones get more complicated. It may be a combination of a couple of different policies.
Yeah, most of the time it is, yeah, right?
Because you might not need it, you know, depending on your situation. And the other caveat that I was going to add in there is, you know, that $2 million you mentioned, if it was a hypothetical number, maybe lower because maybe you've already have a bunch of savings. You might already have a bunch of retirement money. Maybe you have some money set aside for education. So that's where you sort of start with the number and you start to work it out into your plan to figure out, okay, what makes sense for my family specifically?
Yeah. Yeah, what makes sense for you? And the other big thing to keep in mind, if you bought these policies or if you did this analysis years ago, is that your policy is out of date now, right? If it's 10 years since you bought that policy, it's worth taking a look at. Right?
Oh, okay. Just so like car insurance, you should review that too.
Exactly.
Maybe not as frequently, but...
Yeah, well, you just... There are new things coming. I liken it to televisions. I've used this analogy before, right? Where, you know, it used to be, if you think about... A big screen TV, right? 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Well, now it's more than 10 or 15 years ago. But, you know, in the mid-2000s, you got a big old big screen TV. It was, you know, like 4 feet deep. Took three of us to lift out of the thing, and it cost an arm and a leg. But the first thing you see when you walk into Costco now is what?
Oh, it's just ginormous, you know, 80-inch flat screens that are as thin as paper, seems like.
And the picture is incredible. The technology is great. Picture. So the insurance industry has worked very similar to that. So if you bought a policy 15 or 20 years ago, it is very likely that A, you have too much insurance, you don't necessarily need that much anymore, or B, it's an outdated policy, it's outdated tech. It's good to have it reviewed. So if you'd like to do that, if you'd like to have a free review of your outdated, possibly outdated tech, or if you'd like to talk to somebody about how much life insurance do you need, how do I get that insurance, what does that cost, what does that look like? We are a fiduciary firm, and what we do in terms of life insurance is we shop it around. We don't go to any one specific company, right. So you're not bound by anything. So if you'd like to look at that, let us know.
Yeah, and we specifically try to educate. That's probably the biggest piece. You know, we were just going over a case with one of our clients that, you know, he's looking at buy-sell agreement and getting some life insurance for his business, but also potentially some permanent insurance. And, you know, he was looking at a policy that was presented to him and it was very confusing. You know, we engaged with him. We tried to give him options and just go step by step and answer all the little questions because it's new to you. It could be. And it's complicated. Even for somebody that's, you know, licensed for insurance, you know, it's hard to almost keep up with all the little updates they do in the world.
Yeah, right. Well, and the key is, like you said, it's education, right? Yeah. Is getting, you want to get a second opinion. You want to shop around, right? Don't buy the first thing that you see, right? You want to make sure you're getting the best deal possible. And a lot of those places that advertise to go on here and get the cheapest whatever, you get what you pay for, right? So you want to make sure that you're doing your due diligence. And you're finding out exactly what that looks like. So I think that's enough insurance for the day. I mean, we got to get out of here, but it's also the worst conversation to have, the worst topic to really cover. But a lot of people just don't know that there are these, you know, these types of policies out there and that there are options out there. So it doesn't hurt to get a second opinion. So give us a shout, 503-253-3000, if you'd like to have that reviewed. Again, no obligation, no sleazy sales pitch. We'll just give you the info. You make an informed decision. If that's something you want to work with us on, we're happy to. If you want to take it back to your agent that was doing it before, we're happy with that as well. So I'm going to leave you here with the last thoughts here as we start the new year, right? As we move into what is hopefully a transition from just what was just a terrible year, just a bollocks of a year.
Yeah, that's 2021. It's been something else. I just saw in the news that they were some company was recalling 150,000 ceiling fans because they were falling off when they were used.
What else
could 2020 throw at us?
Could have thrown at us. Well, not anything anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's behind us.
Check your ceiling fan.
Check your ceiling fan if you got it recently. Here's to 2021. But I want to just say to all of those of you out there listening that you've stayed with us, I really appreciate you. We appreciate you tuning in. We try to bring you content that's applicable to you, that, you know, is something that is interesting. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of the show. If you have a question that we haven't covered, something you'd like to know about, shoot us an email at askbo@pfgwm.com. Here's looking forward to 2021. We're going to have Taylor and Kevin on more. We're going to have, you know, the three of us will be in here coming at you here from the studio here in Greater Portland. We appreciate you. Be safe.
And happy birthday, Bo.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Here's to a new day in 2021.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with offices at 16100 Northwest Cornell, Suite 140, Beaverton, Oregon, 97006, and 7105 Southwest Barnes Street, Suite 175, Portland, Oregon, 97223. You can reach us by calling 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
We do Investing Simplified. Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We do Investing Simplified.